Okay, so we are studying the book of Hebrews each Sunday morning, and we are looking at it from a particular framework that we borrowed from chapter 3, verse 1. Holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling, the writer is addressing his readers as. He says this next, consider Jesus, and that's kind of served as our theme for the study thus far. We're going to use this idea for every chapter in the book, so we'll get used to this idea before long. In Hebrews chapter 1, we consider Jesus, you may recall, we consider Jesus as God's messenger and develop that idea in keeping with the chapter there and saw how Jesus is the better, superior messenger. In chapter 2, we consider Jesus as our high priest and had, as I recall, a very good discussion about Jesus being our high priest, the role that the high priest played in the Old Testament, and how Jesus continues to do that for us today. And in chapter 3, which we just kind of got started with last week and we'll continue today, we're considering Jesus in his faithfulness. And we're noticing here this inspired writer, unknown to us, known to God, though. These are scriptures from the Lord. We accept that fully. This writer is making very sophisticated arguments about the superiority of Christ. A kind of a side dish or a secondary component to our study of Hebrews is to notice all of the areas in which Jesus is presented as being better, right? So, in Hebrews chapter 3, the writer throws down the gauntlet and says, Jesus is better than Moses. That's a really big deal, especially for these folks. And you recall, we mentioned that this book was likely written to whom? What kind of people got this book originally? Jewish Christians, that's right. So these would be new Christians, first generation Christians, definitely. They did not grow up as Christians. Very few of these people that we're reading about, very few of the heroes of our faith actually were born into a Christian house, just because of the way the dispensations changed. So We're aware of some of the temptations that come when you convert to Christianity from another way of life, What are some of those temptations, by the way? This is not a completely foreign phenomenon to us. There are people like myself and maybe some others in this room who didn't grow up in the Lord's church. And a conversion took place, and then following that conversion, there I don't want to call them problems, I don't even want to call them challenges, there are just some things to be aware of in that situation. Okay, Sam says the big one, the big thing to be aware of, I guess we're calling it, is, that there will be a temptation to go back to where you came from, right? Well, I don't like this new thing, this quote-unquote new thing anymore, so I'm going to go back to what's familiar to me, or I'm going to go back to mom and dad's church or mom and dad's religion or way of life, right? I saw another hand over here. I'll come right back to you, Sam. Yes, sir, Chuck. Right. Yes. Yes. There's still some fundamental misunderstanding about, Moses and Jesus. Less so, definitely less so than right here in first century Bible times. But Chuck's comment about the, confusion over adherence to the Ten Commandments or not, definitely lets us know that this is still something that lingers, right? Sam, you were going to add something else. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. I can imagine. Yes. Right. 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 Indeed. Absolutely, Sam. Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Jeff. There you go. Just making the round. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I can imagine. Yes, sir. And you know, their situations maybe, you know, slightly different than what we're describing this morning, but not completely different, you know. These Jewish Christians, as Brian points out, those are the originally intended recipients. Now, we read this book. It's written for us as well. We benefit tremendously from it, as well as they did. But those to whom it was originally written were Jewish converts to the Christian faith. And that came with a lot of challenges. That came with a lot of, you know, a lot of baggage, a lot of confusion. I mean, that's the main thing that we're all sharing this morning, is that it's kind of confusing, you know. You have mom and dad and everybody that they know and everybody that you know telling you this, but, you know, you have, for whatever reason, obeyed the gospel. You know, you've heard, believed, repented, confessed, been baptized. And so it's the life that you're living now is very different than the life that everybody you know is living. The life that you're living now is different from the life that you grew up living. And so the writer here is efforting to make sure that you stay in this faith, right? And that's why over and over and over and over again the comparison is being made between Jesus and everything else. And that's why over and over and over again, the conclusion is Jesus is better, right? Jesus is better, Jesus is better, Jesus is better. Therefore, don't leave. And that admonition really hits close to home here in chapter 3. We're going to take a look at, well, we'll look at verses 8 and 9. Before we do, I saw Brian's hand. I want to come back around. Yes, sir. Sure. Right. That's a good one. Yeah. Right. That's a very good point, Brian. Go ahead. Right. Right, right. Kind of your whole compass is thrown off, right? When everything that's normal, yeah. Right, when everything that you've known and understood to be normal is suddenly turned upside down, then it's like, I don't even, you know, I don't even know where to begin. Which, you know, not saying that Paul is the writer of this book, but, pardon me. Not saying that Paul is the writer of this book, but Paul was in that very situation. You remember when he met Jesus, met him where, by the way? On the road to Damascus. For what purpose, by the way? Was right, right. Can you imagine, right? He's right in the middle of finding Christians to kill, to persecute, to torture, and it's enthralled in that mission where he meets Jesus and learns up is down, east is west, black is white, everything that he thought was true is now untrue. and following that meeting with Jesus, what was Paul's state of mind for the next 3 days? Right. He didn't eat anything, right? Something's wrong. We have a similar situation to that occurring here in Hebrews chapter 3, where the writer has made the point that Jesus was faithful over the house. Moses was faithful in the house, you remember. Jesus is faithful as a son. Moses is faithful as a what? As a servant. And in verse number 8, the writer continues saying, "Harden not your hearts as in the day of provocation, in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, saw my works for 40 years." That's a very obvious reference to what? Their wilderness wandering, right? That's a very obvious reference to Numbers chapters 13, 14, where God told them, go into the promised land, take it, possess it, it's yours. And they refused. You know, they kind of did, right? They went in and spied it out. And then they came back and then refused. You know, fear won the day. And the writer of Hebrews here in chapter 3 calls that a provocation. And that's clearly defying God. And as a result, they, the children of Israel, saw God's works for 40 years. He was grieved with that generation, verse 10 says, chapter 3, verse 10, Hebrews chapter 3, verse 10. Yes, sir, Sam. Right. So the children of Israel, kind of in keeping with what we're noticing in chapter 3 of Hebrews, they wanted to go back to Egypt, right? And how was Egypt to the children of Israel? Good or bad or what? Bad, right? Yeah. But they were, this is a normalcy bias, you know. People who talk about the end of the world, not the real end of the world, but, you know, the zombie apocalypse and the thing, you know, the world ending in that way, not really ending. But people who talk about, you know, when things get really, 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 really bad, you're just kind of so petrified and so discombobulated about the new situation that you're in that you revert to, you know, very silly normal activities that hamper your progress, right? So as silly as it appears to run into a house that's on fire, if that's your house, and the only thing, you know, that seems normal to you is to go into your house and get your things, well then when the situation is totally changed, that normalcy bias may prove very harmful. And that's what happened with the children of Israel here in, you know, their exodus from Egypt. Egypt was horrific for them, but it was normal. It was comfortable. It was their routine. So when really pushed to a breaking point, the children of Israel said, you know, forget this, we're going to go back to Egypt. You know, we're not going to dare to conquer this new horizon. We're going to go back to what we know, to where we've been, to, you know, what's normal to us. Well, that's exactly what we don't want to happen here in chapter 3 in terms of their now new Christian faith. So, that generation, they erred in their hearts, they disobeyed God's truth, God swore to them, I'm looking at chapter 3, verse 11 here, God swore to them that they will not enter into his rest. And so, Hebrews chapter 3, this is the conclusion at the end of this rather sophisticated line of reasoning. Take heed, brethren, based on this past lesson we've learned from the Old Testament, which was family history to them. You know, based on this past lesson we've learned from the Old Testament, you need to take heed. You need to be careful that you not repeat the same tragedy that they made. Now, we're not talking necessarily about religious beliefs in this class. That's our Wednesday night class. But this is a prime example of what false doctrine. What false doctrine comes to your mind? Or is there a false doctrine that comes to your mind when we read the writer saying, hey, you Christians, make sure that you don't fall away? What false doctrine comes to mind? Okay, all right. The idea, the very popular religious belief that says, hey, once you're saved, you're always saved. Well, if that's true, then so much of what we're looking at in Hebrews chapter 3 seems really, really strange, doesn't it? I mean, if they can't fall away, why does the writer say, hey, make sure you don't fall away? If they cannot fall away, in other words, if once they're saved, they're always saved, why does the inspired writer here in verse number 12 say, take heed, make sure that you don't fall away? So, what actual message is this communicating? That it is possible for us to do what? To fall away. And that we have to be, go ahead, Sam. Right. You're right. That's right. That's right. Make a shame of his death, right? Yes, sir. Very good. So, look at verse 13. Exhort one another daily while it's called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. So there's a real struggle going on between those of us who want to do what's right and the devil who wants us to do what's wrong. And we see here in chapter 3, verse 13, that the cunning of the devil is going to be very, very hidden through the deceitfulness of sin, verse 13 calls it. In other words, you know, the devil is not ever going to appear to anybody or you know, the workers for the devil. We know that these sorts of miraculous appearings don't happen. But the devil's never going to present his proposition as, hey, I want you to do this, and it's going to be a sin, and you're going to be lost as a result of that. That's never the way it works, is it? In Genesis chapter 3, when Satan enticed Adam and Eve, what was the plan? Well, the plan was to make that sin, make that temptation seem as, you know, as tempting as possible, as good as possible. And never is there any explanation of what's going to happen next, right? That's the deceitfulness of sin, chapter 4, verse 13. Chapter 3, I beg your pardon. Chapter 3, verse 13, the deceitfulness of sin. Uh-huh. Right, right. Mm-hmm. Very good. So look at verse 14 then. We are partakers of Christ, right? As someone who has heard, believed, repented, confessed, and been baptized, we We become a part of the Lord's what? Hear, believe, repent, confess, be baptized. You are a part of the Lord's church, kingdom, body, all that, right? So we are partakers of this. If, notice the condition, so therefore notice the answer to the claim that once we're saved, we're always saved. If we are partakers, if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end. So this is the opposite. I mean, the total opposite of once saved, always saved. This is very much the idea. We've seen it over and over and over again in Scripture, that we have to give diligence, we have to work, we have to be steadfast, we have to continue. All of those buzzwords are used. And here we have holding the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end. While it is said, verse 15, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation. Not all came out of Egypt by Moses. Some were lost, right? Which is another, not to turn this class into one of our Wednesday night religious studies class, but here we are studying Hebrews, and there's a wide open door to notice this very popular religious belief as well. The fact that some of the children of Israel were saved from Egypt, right? They were saved from Egypt. They left, but they did not stay saved, is another very palatable proof that once saved, always saved just can't be right. You know, they were not all saved, ultimately saved by Moses. They did not remain saved by Moses. They left Egypt, okay? They left their old ways. They were saved, but they didn't stay saved and make it into the promised land. Their carcasses, what happened to them, verse 17? Their carcasses, say it again. Yeah, okay, their carcasses fell in the wilderness, right? Because of their disobedience. Verse 19 is the kicker, last verse of the chapter. Somebody willing to read that for us? Hebrews chapter 3, verse 19. They were not able to enter because of unbelief. And that is the very thing that the writer is trying to warn these Jewish Christians concerning. Don't be anemic in your faith. Don't be unbelieving. Unbelief, by the way, is the same sin that God accused Moses of. You remember that? Do you recall the situation? God tells Moses that he should do what to the rock to bring water from it? To speak to the rock, right? So the instructions were to speak to the rock. And what would happen when Moses spoke to the rock? Water would come out from it. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. This would be yet another of the comforts that God gives the children of Israel, because they no more got out of the land of Egypt that they didn't start complaining about, you know, being tired, being hungry, being thirsty. You know, my kids have been on spring break all week, and I'm happy to see it over because these kids have got to get up and do some things, you know. I can tell Bailey's had enough when she eats and then 15 minutes later she comes and I'm hungry. But then when we make her something, she sits down and takes a couple of bites, and then guess what? Suddenly, magically, she's full, right? Okay, and then 15 minutes later, I'm hungry. So that's when I know it's time, you know, that's when I know it's time for you to, you know, find something else to do for the day. That's when I start coming up with the list of chores that I could give her. And then suddenly, no, she's, you know, she's fine. I'm just leaving, right? Well, the children of Israel no more stepped away from the table of Egypt that they didn't start complaining and whining about wanting more, needing more, woe is me, what are we going to do? Now, mind you, they saw everything that Pharaoh saw. So these people should, I mean, these people should have come out of Egypt with a healthy faith. Man, look what God just did. Times 10, right? And to kick it all off, I mean, the cherry on top, no offense, but, you know, they walked right through the Red Sea, right? So if anybody is going to believe in God's providence and God's ability to take care of us through whatever comes, it should be these Jews, right? Wrong. They, you know, they wanted bread, and what did God cause to happen? Bread fell literally from heaven. Can you believe it? And then give them a little while later, and they're tired of bread. So what does God cause to happen? Yeah, quails come, and just right there, you know. And then they're thirsty, and they're afraid they're gonna die of thirst. Really? You really think that God has done all this for you and he's not able to give you water? It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. Yes, sir, Wesley. Right. Right. That's a good point. Absolutely. I appreciate you making that point too, because the message is, you know, something, there's something more to it than this, right? There's something more to it than this. They were leaving Egypt not just to walk around. They were leaving Egypt to go somewhere better. And there was a little journey between here and there. But they complained and murmured and fussed about God's ability to take care of them. So God says to Moses, you speak to this rock and water's going to come out of it. Moses, understandably frustrated, right, had it up to here with these people. Instead of speaking to the rock, Numbers chapter 11, what does Moses do? He hits the rock. God still gave the people water. But God calls that action of Moses disbelief, because you believed me not. Well, he was speaking and speaking to the rock, speaking to them, but the point is he went too far. Let's see. That's Numbers chapter 11. Let me flip over there, and we'll notice specifically what it is that God says to Moses. He also says, "Must we fetch you water out of this rock?" So, you know, he was taking on maybe just a bit more credit for that than what he should have. I'm gonna pull out my smartphone here and I'll find it. Yeah, Numbers chapter 11. I'm looking for the verse though, Sam. But what God called that action was a disbelief, right? Oh, I'm sorry, Numbers chapter 20. Did I say chapter 11? Beg your pardon. It's verses 11 and 12. Maybe that's what I was thinking. Numbers chapter 20, verses 11 and 12. We'll go with that anyway. I was thinking 11. Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice. Now some people call specific attention to that, and maybe that's worthwhile to do. But the point is that he hit the rock in addition to, rather than speaking to the rock. And notice what God calls that. Verse number 12. Somebody have Numbers chapter 20, verse 12. Believed me not, right? That's a very, very interesting pronouncement, especially on Moses. I used to preach a sermon. I don't think I would preach it exactly this way anymore. I used to preach a sermon about a man who didn't believe in God, and it was Moses, which, you know, is... Maybe in the spirit of the pronouncement in Numbers chapter 20, verse 12. But the point that I like to draw from all of that is Moses knew that God existed, right? When you think about somebody who doesn't believe in God, typically our mind first associates that with atheism. And it's true, atheists don't believe in God. But it's also true, and this is the point that I like to make, because there is a practical disbelief, there is an operational disbelief in God that sometimes a lot of us get numb to. And Moses is a really, really good example of a person who knew that God is real, who knew what God was capable of doing, who was working for the Lord, and at the same time, he disobeyed God. So, and God calls that disobedience a lack of belief, right? Which lets us know, I mean, this makes a beautiful cake here, that belief equals what? What does belief equal? Obedience, action, same thing, right? Belief equals obedience. So, a lack of obedience is processed by God as a lack of belief. No matter what else we might say about the situation, if we don't do what God tells us to do, God says, "You're not believing me." We'll go here first and then over the check. Yes, ma'am. It is. Right. 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 Well, let me show you another verse that I like too. I appreciate the encouragement. John chapter 3. John chapter 3, verse 36. Let me read it to you from the American Standard Version, and you follow along with me and you spot the difference. Are you ready? John 3, 36. He that believeth on the Son hath everlasting life, and he that obeyeth not the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God abides on him. Was that different than in your translation? Okay, let's read it again. Look at verse 36, John chapter 3. He that believeth on the Son hath everlasting life, he that obeyeth not, that's where it gets different, right? In your translation it says what? Believeth not. So he that believeth on the Son has life. He that believeth not on the Son does not have life. In the American Standard Version, it translates it, he that believes has life. He that obeys not doesn't have life. And let me tell you why I think that's interesting. Those two words are the exact same Greek word, pistos, which means faith, right? But it doesn't just mean this empty, you know, shapeless belief. I believe that God is. That's not what Bible belief is. Bible belief is that acceptance, that mental epiphany, that mental acknowledgement, but Bible belief is also working. James chapter 2, right? I mean, right, absolutely, Sam. James chapter 2 is what Bible belief is. It is, sure, it's in the head. Yes, it's what the head knows, but it's also what the body does. Because belief can't stay passive. Belief, Bible belief has to be active. Bible belief has to be doing. It has to be obeying. It has to be keeping. It has to be growing, right? That's what Bible belief is. Chuck, I saw your hand up. Then we'll come back to you, Sam. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Right, absolutely. So there's a lot of stuff that we have to do to keep this faith. The book of Hebrews is evangelistic. It's a lot of things, right? We're noticing it deeply in our study. And we're seeing this morning the book of Hebrews as an evangelism tool, but as an evangelism tool towards Christians. Because it's not just the people who have never heard, believed, repented, confessed, and been baptized who need to be saved. It's those of us who have done all those things who need to be saved. Because for the obvious reason, once we're saved, we're not always saved. We see that clearly in chapter 3. But also, we see that there is a responsibility on our part as Christians to stay saved, to keep on growing, to keep on guarding, to keep on keeping, to keep on encouraging. Right? I wonder how many people are going to be lost on the day of judgment because they have not encouraged somebody else to be saved, because they have not been an encouragement to other Christians. I wonder how many people are going to be lost on the day of judgment because they have discouraged elders or preachers' wives or elders' wives or deacons or Bible class teachers or people who clean up the pews or people who sweep out the fellowship hall or people who clean the light bulbs or do whatever they do. I wonder how many people are going to be lost because they have not encouraged those things. Because as Chuck points out, Hebrews 3 ends with the need for us to take care, keep guard, and also to encourage others to do the same thing. Sam, yes, sir, you can have the final word this morning. Fix everything that we got wrong. Yes, sir. The rock issue, I said. Yeah. Those connections are made, right? Those connections are the big picture is obey, right? And a failure to obey is registered with God as a lack of belief. So, Hebrews chapter 3, we consider Jesus, we consider his faithfulness, and how he was better, and how we should follow him. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Appreciate y'all being here.
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.